Blog Talk Radio.
Currently 11 degrees Celsius in Calgary. That's about 52 degrees Fahrenheit for our American listeners. I'm your host, Colin Knight, a.k.a. Internet Chat Guru Nostra. Tonight, we shall be reviewing weekly issues of the world and, of course, the U.S. election. 41 days and counting. Before we get to the latest world information, let's do some quick shout-outs. Susan from Liverpool, England. It was great meeting you at the recent conference in Banff, Alberta. Enjoy your stay in Canada, and make sure you stay in touch. James from Ohio, thanks for your take on the Ohio voting plan. We hope you are right. We shall be using some of your qualified data tonight, so keep sending the information. Dave from Winnipeg, I appreciate your input on the Canadian-made oil jobs spin-offs. We shall try to get some oil pipeline news tonight. Marcy from California, thanks for your chuckle remarks about the William Tell opinion pieces on the VOCRradio.com website. Your input is important to us. Next time, give me permission to release your opinion. It would definitely add to the decision. The BC Dreamcatcher, they say possible snow next Tuesday. Better plan that road trip soon, huh? Julie from Vancouver, BC, thanks for your information regarding the pipeline resistance groups in British Columbia. We shall cover some of the issues tonight if we get time. The Southeast Brickie's much better half, back to hairdressing? Watch those scissor moves you do. One slip, and it really is a bad snip. Jeeves, let's check out what kind of email we have tonight. What do you think? Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
You've got email, Governor.
Email comes from a reader and a listener who actually refuses to allow the VOCR to release her vicious, nasty statements made against the William Tell's opinion pieces. Now, of course, they're all over on the VOCRradio.com website. The word hate is understated when explaining these emails. I think the email attacker actually hates the writer personally. William Tell is an eclectic opinion piece, which is submitted by a very seasoned internet chatter on the VOCRradio.com website. Now, William Tell offers insight and sometimes tongue-in-cheek information about chatters at large, and is simply an opinion piece which is wide-ranging. Now, the email sender believes that much of what is written and submitted through the William Tells is actually aimed at them, claiming subtle word attacks and insults about certain writings and proclivities focused against them. Now, this, of course, is ludicrous. We believe the hate writer has a disorder, a persecution complex, possibly. Let me again make this very clear. The opinion pieces submitted to our website are the opinions of the writer and not necessarily the opinions of VOCR or its affiliates. At no time do we offer a launch pad for hate or a portal for personal attacks. But if the shoe fits, we respectfully suggest that if anyone believes they are being persecuted or hidden meanings are about them, then they should email the writer of William Tell's and take it up with the opinion submitter. Threatening the VOCR with various poxies on our house and nasties is futile. The paraphrase Craig Ferguson from the Late Late Show on CBS, VOCR cares. Melanie from Edmonton emailed, "My husband and I enjoy your blog and show and have listened to you on the internet chat also. Could you include more political and social goings-on in Canada and specifically Alberta?" Edmonton, Alberta. Well, Melanie, thank you for your kind words. We do attempt to inject Canadian content, and weekly we try to touch the oil issue as it is also important to our overseas listeners. We make a conscious effort to not regionalize our information in order to provide service to a broader audience, but we shall be focusing more on the oil and pipeline and Alberta issues after the November election in the U.S., which is, 41 days away. Finally, John from Oklahoma. John wrote his concerns that a Canadian internet radio show should not be attempting to influence U.S. politics. Well, John, the election in the U.S. directly affect the well-being of Canada and the world, and in such, it is paramount that we support a candidate who is pro-free trade, pro-Canadian market, and pro-Canadian oil pipeline advocate. It is of paramount importance that the North American continent have a safe security stance on the world market, and we need to break the financial stranglehold of OPEC on the world oil market. A secured oil delivery, an abundance of natural resources offered by Canada to our neighbors in the south, must be utilized in order to break the control of enemies of the West. We provide a safe delivery to North American markets, and we can no longer afford to be at odds with each other. And as neighbors, it is good policy to be in sync and provide a positive future for our kids and our grandkids. But I do thank you for your email, John, and we do appreciate your honest opinion. When we come back, we shall open the phone lines. Feel free to interject with anything that may be on your mind. You know, it is open lines, after all, right? Isn't it?
This is the VOCR Radio on the TerraChat Radio Network. You are listening to VOCR Radio on the TerraChat Radio Network. We'll be right back.
For every person who found a job last month, which was not a lot, three people gave up looking for a job.
Even though we all struggle to make ends meet, some being luckier than others, the pressure which surrounds our daily lives sometimes sends average citizens off the rails. But for the grace of God go I. There's a modern saying that many citizens are two paychecks away from the street. The downturn of the economy certainly has not helped in reducing pressures on the home front. If you're doing okay, remember those who are less fortunate. Be considerate to their needs and their feelings. But for the grace of God go I.
This is the voice of the Canadian Rockers on blogtalkradio.com.
Looking to contact the show? VOCR2012@gmail.com. 24-hour opinion line 240-696-6030 or on air live 347-324-3287.
For every person who got a job last month, which was not a lot, 3 people gave up looking for a job.
This is the voice of the Canadian Rockers on TerraChat Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification calling night. Opinion from Guru Says.
Today, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Mr. Dinner Jacket, UN. As expected, many of the Western country representatives walked out, leaving behind those who were prepared to listen to this maniac. Yesterday, Barack Obama spoke of reducing Christian exclusivity in the Western world, and Mr. Dinner Jacket, calling for a new world order, demanded respect for the Muslim teachings and the right to slaughter their own citizens at will, claiming that the deaths of Muslims was actually the will of Allah. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said Tuesday that a new world order needs to emerge away from years of what he called American bullying and domination. Ahmadinejad spoke to various press associations, including the Associated Press, in a wide-ranging interview on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly, his last as President of Iran, thank God. He addressed the Assembly Wednesday morning. The Iranian leader also discussed solutions for the Syrian civil war, dismissed the questions of Iranians' nuclear ambition, and claimed that despite Western sanctions, his country is better off than it was when he took office in 2005. He said, "God willing, a new world order will come together and we'll do away with everything that distances us," Ahmadinejad said, speaking through a translator. "I do believe the system of empires has reached the end of the road. The world can no longer see an emperor commanding it." Now, even elementary school kids throughout the world have understood that the United States government is following an international policy of bullying, Ahmadinejad said. President Barack Obama warned Iran earlier Tuesday that time is running out to resolve the dispute over the nuclear program. In a speech to the General Assembly, Obama said the United States could not tolerate an Iran with atomic weapons. All this while Obama shuns Israel. Yeah, he said all of this, and yet he goes and shuns Israel. Kind of strange, isn't it? Don't you think? But, you know, that's Ahmadinejad, and that's Barack Obama. They do some very, very strange things. All this while Obama shuns Israel and refuses to meet, claiming schedule conflicts while visiting the left-wing shows such as David Letterman, who used to be funny, and of course the ladies on The View, which has never really been that funny, which, if anyone has watched lately, shows them to be a liberal Democrat news propaganda show, almost agent provocateurs for the DNC camp. The View, led by Barbara Walters and Whoopi Goldberg, who kibitz and wrangle with an old comedian hack, Joy Behar, who actually failed to produce sufficient ratings on a recent CNN show, which was so politically biased and poorly scripted that even CNN was embarrassed. The View, which commands a strong female audience with a token Republican conservative Elizabeth Hasselbeck and an insecure nobody, now star, Sherry Shepherd. The ladies of The View are propaganda agents for Obama, who do command an impressive female audience daily and willingly pander to Mr. and Mrs. Obama at every possible opportunity. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, an outspoken critic of Democratic issues, is a class act, showing a great deal of restraint when Obama comes to town, probably at the threat of her job. And of course, Barbara Wawa, of course, panders to Obama's lies and deceit in order to maintain her standing as an impartial journalist, which we all know is an old and worn-out statement, much like the political opinions of many of the hosts on that show. If you were a tree, what kind of a tree would you be? Yeah, if you were a tree, what kind of a tree would you be?
So it was interesting you showed a clip of the Secretary of State there, Hillary Clinton, because she has been meeting with all kinds of world leaders while President Obama has been meeting with the ladies from The View.
That's right. I mean, Hillary Clinton could not have written this moment better herself. I mean, it looked a little foolish for the president to be talking about some of the issues on The View with the girls on the couch while Secretary was meeting with all of these leaders about all of these important issues. Yesterday she met with the leaders of Libya, Egypt, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and President Obama is trashing Mitt Romney.
Would it be disastrous for the country if Mitt Romney were elected?
Well, you know, I think America is so strong and we've got so much going for us that we can survive a lot. But the American people don't want to just survive. We want everybody to thrive. We want policies are more likely to lead us to where we want to go.
You know, the president has campaigning on his foreign policy credentials. He got rid of bin Laden. He's ending the war in Afghanistan. He ended the war in Iraq. So it just seemed a little weird that here he had this world stage to show how important he was as a world statesman, and here he is talking on The View.
But how significant are these meetings? Are there any big accomplishments that really come out of these meetings? Because I know he is getting a lot of criticism over this, but what's the outcome anyway?
If you look at some of the issues that are out there, and you saw what happened last week, raging protests in Pakistan, to not take a minute to sit down with the president of Pakistan and show when you have the imprimatur of the president speaking about some of these issues. I mean, Secretary Clinton certainly capable of dealing with some of these things, but the U.S. has a lot of business with Libya, with the president of Egypt, President Morsi, with Afghanistan and Pakistan. So I think that it might have been a little bit error in judgment, or his aides might have advised him a little badly on this one, because it does make a difference.
Thank you, Barbara Wawa.
This is the VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockies on the TerraChat Radio Network.
America's on the wrong track, but Mitt Romney and I will take the right steps in the right time to get us back on the right track. I believe that my record of getting things done in Congress will be a very helpful complement to Governor Romney's executive and private sector success outside of Washington. I've worked closely with Republicans as well as Democrats to advance an agenda of economic growth, fiscal discipline, and job creation. I'm proud to stand with a man who understands what it takes to foster job creation in our economy. Someone who knows from experience that if you have a small business, you did build that.
This year, in this election, we are called to reaffirm our values and our commitments, to hold them against a hard reality, and see how we're measuring up to the legacy of our forebears and the promise of future generations. And fellow Americans, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, I say to you tonight, we have more work to do.
You're either part of the problem or part of the solution. Well, regrettably, President Obama has become part of the problem, and Mitt Romney is the solution. That America is a place where if you work hard and play by the rules, you can get ahead.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
I'll say, Newt Gingrich, who ran against Romney and has since endorsed Romney as a Republican candidate, said recently that the upcoming presidential debate on October the 3rd is the most important single event in Mitt Romney's political career. The elite news media is doing everything they can to convince Romney supporters that the election is lost. Americans will be tuning in that evening to see if Governor Romney turns this media narrative on its head. This will be the first time Americans will see the President Obama and his challenger side by side. This will be the largest audience to watch the two men side by side without editing or distortion by the media. And if Romney wins this debate, the next debate will have an even larger audience. If he loses it, the elite media will be giddy in its intense reporting of the Obama victory. And the Obama team will be equally as giddy and energized by proclamation of victory. The media will attempt to pounce on a strong Obama debate and try to bring back the Bain capital, the 47% income tax returns, and a host of wounds as perceived by the left. On the other hand, a Romney victory will destroy the false media narrative that is determined to avoid President Obama's failure. Suddenly, unemployment over 8%, gasoline rising from $1.89 when Obama was elected to $3.89 today, massive deficits, the Obamacare, weakness in foreign policy, and a host of other failures will obviously rush to the forefront. Obviously, a lot depends on this debate. Boy, did Newt hit that on the head? The debate on October the 3rd could be the coup de grace for either candidate. Personally, I cannot wait, and I hope Romney hits Obama as hard as Kennedy did Nixon. But expect dirty tricks. Mainstream media do not want Romney, and they will skew whatever is required to make Obama look good while lowering Romney's profile. Watch those questions, everybody, on October the 3rd. I'm also looking forward to the Biden-Ryan debate. Old Joe will need the mainstream media machine to protect him against a very savvy politician, such as Paul Ryan. Old Joe will have his hands full, unless, of course, mainstream media come to his defense.
Now, one side in this campaign has been telling us that the issues of this election are the maintenance of peace and prosperity. The line has been used, we've never had it so good.
I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him... Help me.
But I have an uncomfortable feeling that this prosperity isn't something on which we can base our hopes for the future.
The key point I'm making right now is that the economy is moving in a positive direction.
And yet our government continues to spend $17 million a day more than the government takes in.
You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? Yes, yes, I'm telling you.
You are listening to VOCR Radio on the TerraChat Radio Network. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Good afternoon. I have enjoyed a full day of meetings with leaders of the government here in Great Britain. I've spoken with members of the government as well as the opposition. We've spoken about matters of foreign policy, domestic policy, economic outlook, and developments here in the UK and across Europe and across the world. I found the discussions to be enlightening and instructive, and have enjoyed the personal opportunity to come to know a number of the members of the leadership here in Great Britain.
This is VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockies.
We believe probable cause exists indicating that forgery and fraud may have been committed.
This is Voice of the Canadian Rockets on blogtalkradio.com.
On air live, 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. You got a business. That you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Expanding your mind to the greatest world about you in the dead of night.
calling nights, and he looks into the darkness and looks for those things that go bump in the night. Night Talk Radio with Colin Knight on the Terror Chat Radio Network.
And Night Talk Radio will be live Saturday night. We have a couple of special guests. We do invite you to join. Check out all things that are spooky. But tonight we are dealing with politics and world issues, and we remind you that the phone lines are open. What is your opinion on the political status of the U.S. election?
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Let me say this to every American who is thinking about who should be our next president. No one will work harder. No one will care more. And no one will move heaven and earth like Mitt Romney to make this country a better place to live.
We're a nation of immigrants. We're the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the ones who wanted a better life. The driven ones. The ones who woke up at night hearing that voice telling them that life in the place called America could be better. They came not just in pursuit of the riches of this world, but for the richness of this life. Freedom. Freedom of religion. Freedom to speak their mind. Freedom to build a life. And yes, freedom to build a business with their own hands.
We can reform our tax code in a way that is fair and responsible. Which, by the way, means let's stop giving tax breaks to businesses that ship jobs and factories overseas. Let's reward companies that create jobs and manufacturing right here in the United States of America.
On air live, 347-324-3287.
Will work harder. No one will care more. And no one will move heaven and earth like Mitt Romney to make this country a better place to live.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification, Colin Knight.
Listen to a story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up to the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
A story from the BBC tonight. Mention Canada, and images of Mounties and maple syrup or possibly Montreal or the Canadian Rockies are most likely to spring to mind. But the country is sitting on the second largest oil reserve in the world. Its extraction could lead to a great wealth, but it also raises some environmental concerns. The bulk of reserves lie in the oil sands of northern Alberta, and recently Cathy Kay, the anchor of BBC World News America, moderated a panel of experts at the University of Calgary. These men and women offered their perspective on Canada's role in supplying the global energy. Canada is now the fifth largest producer of oil in the world, and it is the fourth largest exporter in the world. So ask yourself, which of these countries in the world of that magnitude of oil export are politically stable, free market, rule of law? This, according to Peter Terzakian, Chief Energy Economist and Managing Director of ARC Financial Group. He argued, those distinctions put Canada in a very unique position, especially at a time when political volatility has raised serious questions about supply routes and driven pricing higher. For decades, Canada has been the largest supplier of oil to the United States, but recently a row has erupted over the proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada into the northern U.S. President Obama rejected TransCanada's original path on the basis that it could damage environmentally sensitive areas in the North American Midwest. Now, a new route has been submitted. Brenda Kenny, president of the Canadian Energy Pipeline and one of the panelists, said, "I still hold a high degree of hope that eventually the president will see fit to approve the northern portion, and the southern portion is well underway." But while the U.S. has long been a consumer of Canadian oil, other countries are now lining up to become customers. According to panelist Harry Vrendberg, a professor at the University of Calgary's Haskins School of Business, demand growth in the world is coming not from North America or Europe, but from those emerging economies. He said, "We all know about China, but right behind China is India and all the other emerging economies of the world. They're there to feed the rising demand, and plans are underway to increase the flow of oil to the west coast of British Columbia, where it can be shipped onto U.S. and Asian markets." And on a recent trip to Washington, D.C., Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper made it clear that diversifying the country's market was a top priority. "We have taken a significant price hit by virtue of the fact that we are a captive supplier, and that just does not make sense in terms of the broader interests of the Canadian economy," he said. The rush to feed all of those markets has raised environmental concerns. Concerns about what the mining process is doing to the land and the surrounding habitat. Now, despite moves by the industry to decrease the footprint of open mines while extracting oil sands deeper underground, some claim the new method produces even more CO2 gases. There is a growing concern that the development is moving faster than the scientific research and government regulations. It's a point acknowledged by Andrew Leach, a professor at the University of Alberta. He said, "You've seen multiple panels at the federal level, at the provincial level, come out and say that our environmental monitoring has not kept up yet with the pace of growth. The one thing that is certain is that Canada will continue to be one of the world's greatest suppliers of oil. Its vast reserves, more than 170 billion barrels, are fueling an incredible growth." But consumers around the world are conflicted. They want their oil cheap, plentiful, and clean. Three demands that are not necessarily compatible in Canada or anywhere else. The debate was one of the most interesting discussions regarding the Alberta oil sands, and we thoroughly recommend anyone interested in the issue to read and listen to that debate on the bbc.co.uk website. In British Columbia, Canada, there are a number of protest organizations hell-bent on stopping the Northern Pipeline, as well as the takeover of a giant oil company known as Nexen by a Chinese conglomerate. Nexen has a majority stake in the oil fields off the UK coast, although does have stake in Canada's oil patch. So what does Alberta oil contribute to Canada? The Canadian Energy Research Institute estimates oil sands will create $444 billion in tax revenue across Canada over the next 25 years, and over 70%, or $322 billion, will go to the federal government. Alberta companies have signed millions of dollars in contracts with companies throughout Canada to support activity in the oil sands. Key industries servicing the oil sands include machinery and metal fabrication, particularly in Ontario. Atlantic Canada is seeing increased activity in certain industries such as manufacturing, and New Brunswick steel manufacturers have recently signed contracts worth an estimated $50 million. Over the next 25 years, employment in the oil sands is expected to grow from 75,000 jobs in 2010 to 905,000 jobs in 2035, with 126,000 of those being sourced in provinces outside of Alberta. So what do Canada's oil sands have to do with the United States? Canada is the largest supplier of oil to the U.S., and for every two jobs created in Canada from the oil sands, a third job is created in the U.S. Oil sands element is projected to generate $521 billion in economic activity in the U.S. over the next 25 years. Although Obama is withholding consent for the XL pipeline, Mitt Romney has promised to authorize pipeline on day one of his presidency. The VOCR has extended invitations to a number of organizations who oppose the pipeline, both XL and Northern Gateway, but we have not yet had a response. When they do, we shall give them airtime and discussion, as we do our audience with open phone lines, and you can call at any time.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
The Obama camp during the election have hammered away at the Bain Capital story, claiming that Romney has sent jobs overseas or shut down plants and businesses, throwing Americans out of work. Luckily, there are some news reporters who still have a few threads of decency and have proven many of those stories untrue. Romney clearly has the work ethic and experience to get the American economy back on track. His proven record with the Salt Lake Olympics and his governorship of Massachusetts gives him clear advantage over the failed policies of the Obama administration. However, mainstream media continue to tout the exaltations of a failed Obama game while denying Romney a chance to provide clear direction. As stated earlier, the U.S. election campaign has been the dirtiest, most untruthful campaign ever waged by a president, but the facts are what they are. Unemployment in the U.S. continues to rise, the economy continues to sputter along, and the respect of the U.S. once had in the world has been reduced to mere whispers and giggles and confusion. This does not bode well for our allies overseas.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Good afternoon. I have enjoyed a full day of meetings with the leaders of the government here in Great Britain. I've spoken with members of the government as well as the opposition. We've spoken about matters of foreign policy, domestic policy, economic outlook, and developments here in the UK and across Europe and across the world. I found the discussions to be enlightening and instructive, and have enjoyed the personal opportunity to come to know a number of the members of the leadership here in Great Britain.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. You got a business. You didn't build that. Somebody else.
I am going to predict that within the 4 years of my term, that we would get unemployment down to 6%. According to the president's plan, we're supposed to be at 5.6% by now, and he hasn't accomplished that. We're still above 8%. He said if we put in place a stimulus, we'd never go above 8%. We've had 41 straight months above 8%. Now, my plan is based on five key changes that will change the direction of our economy and will get our unemployment rate down and get our wages coming up again. And I'll tell you what the 5 points are. Very quickly. One is taking advantage of our energy resource. Number two is opening new trade for American goods and services around the world. Number three is scaling back the size of government, cutting the deficit. Number four is making sure we're creating human capital with great schools for our kids and training for our workers. And number five is restoring economic freedom by holding down regulation to those that are absolutely necessary and reforming our tax code.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. You are listening to VOCR Radio on the TerraChat Radio Network. Got a question? Want to make a comment? 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Good old World War II song, British song that was sang by my father, God rest his soul. He really enjoyed Vera Lynn. Vera Lynn, they'll always be in England. On the entertainment front, Madonna is doing damage control, attempting to explain her black Muslim comments about President Obama. During a Monday show at Washington, D.C.'s Verizon Center, Madge turned political for an onstage 4 more years pitch, defending fallen leaders like Lincoln and Martin Luther King Jr., while making a plea for freedom to her cheering crowd. Now, it's so amazing and incredible to think that we have an African-American in the White House, she said. We have a black Muslim in the White House. It means there is hope for the country, and Obama is fighting for gay rights, so support the man, she said. But the 54-year-old pop star is standing by her seemingly erroneous statements about Obama, because the White House and others widely acknowledge Obama as a practicing Christian, although many have questions regarding that. And after it sparked backlash, saying the controversial comment was just being facetious. So what was her true explanation? Well, she said she was being ironic on stage. Now, this is an issue, a statement issued by her spokeswoman. She said, "Yes, I know Obama is not a Muslim, though I know that plenty of people in this country think he is. And what if he were?" she reasoned. "The point I was making is that a good man is a good man, no matter who he prays to. I don't care what religion Obama is, nor should anyone else in America." Now, Madonna has not to be shy about voicing her support of Obama's re-election, and she did display a tattoo on her lower back on Monday reading Obama. Now, I'm sure, as the typical pop star will reveal in the next few months when Obama loses the presidency, there will be a big red line across that beautiful tattoo. Madonna is a great entertainer, but definitely not an educator or well-versed in politics. One of those Hollywood millionaires so hated by Obama, but her money is so loved by the Obama campaign. I chuckle every time I hear her theme song, knowing her reputation, like a virgin, touched for the very first time. Well, she's touched all right. She drank the Obama Kool-Aid, or was that Lewinsky's special quencher? A 54-year-old over-the-hill pop star, and Dennis Rodman must be laughing his butt off. The stories that he could tell. The stories that he could tell.
Of all the objectives we seek, first and foremost is the establishment of lasting world peace. We know only too well that war comes not when the forces of freedom are strong. It is when they are weak that tyrants are tempted.
4 years from the excitement of that last election, for the first time, the majority of Americans now doubt that our children will have a better future. It's not what we were promised. This is when our nation was supposed to start paying down the national debt and rolling back those massive deficits. This was the hope and change America voted for. It's not just what we wanted. It's not just what we expected. It's what Americans deserve. You deserved it because during these years you worked harder than ever before. You deserve it because your family depended on you. And you did it because you're an American and you don't quit. I wish President Obama had succeeded because I want America to succeed. But his promises gave way to disappointment and division. This isn't something we have to accept. Now is the moment when we can do something. And with your help, we will do something. Now is the moment when we can stand up and say, "I'm an American. I make my destiny. We deserve better. My children deserve better. My family deserves better. My country deserves better."
Peace is made by the fact of strength. Economic, military, and strategic. Peace is lost when such strength disappears, or just as bad, is seen by an adversary as disappearing.
No one disputes that President Obama inherited a difficult situation. And in his first 2 years, with his party in complete control of Washington, he passed nearly every item on his agenda. But that didn't make things better. In fact, we find ourselves in a nation facing debt, doubt, and despair. This is the worst economic recovery in 70 years. Unemployment has been above 8% for more than 3 years, the longest run since the Great Depression. Families are hurting. We have the largest deficits and the biggest federal government since World War II. Nearly one out of six Americans are in poverty, the worst rate in a generation. Moms and dads are struggling to make ends meet. Household incomes have dropped more than $4,000 over the past 4 years. Whatever the explanations, whatever the excuses, this is a record of failure. President Obama and too many of like him in Washington have refused to make difficult decisions because they are more worried about their next election than they are about the next generation. We can turn this thing around. Real solutions can be delivered, but it will take leadership and the courage to tell you the truth. Mitt Romney is this kind of leader. I'm excited for what lies ahead.
I'm thrilled to be a part of America's comeback team, and together, we will unite America and get this done.
You know there's something wrong with the kind of job he's done as president when the best feeling you had was the day you voted for him. The president hasn't disappointed you because he wanted to. The president has disappointed America because he hasn't led America in the right direction. He took office without the basic qualification that most Americans have, and one that was essential to the task at hand. He had almost no experience working in a business. Jobs to him are about government. I learned the real lessons about how America works from experience. And yet the centerpiece of the president's entire re-election campaign is attacking success. Is it any wonder that someone who attacks success has led the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression? In America, we celebrate success. We don't apologize for success. That's what this president doesn't seem to understand. It's the genius of the American free enterprise system to harness the extraordinary creativity and talent and industry of the American people with a system that's dedicated to creating tomorrow's prosperity, not trying to redistribute today's.
Hear, hear, Mr. Romney.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Final 4 minutes, Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, made his debut on the global stage of the United Nations on Wednesday, celebrating himself as the nation's first democratically elected leader who was swept into office after what he called a great peaceful revolution. Morsi, an Islamist and key figure in the once-banned Muslim Brotherhood, said at the UN General Assembly on Wednesday that the first issue of the world body should be certifying the rights of the Palestinian people. The fruits of dignity and freedom must not remain far from the Palestinian people, he said, adding that it was shameful the UN resolutions are not being enforced. He decreed Israel's continued building of settlements on territory that the Palestinians claim for a future state in the West Bank. The Egyptian president reaffirmed his country's commitment to uphold its international obligations, foremost the UN Charter. Regarding the ongoing civil war in Syria, he said he will not rest until it is brought to an end. He called the fighting there, which opposition groups say has killed over 30,000 people, the tragedy of the age, and one that we must all end. And he invited all nations Wednesday to join effort being led by Cairo in a bid to stop the bloodshed that began about 18 months ago, when opposition figures rose up against President Bashar Assad's regime. He and his father, of course, have run the country as a dictatorship for the last 40 years. Morsi also condemned U.S.-made video denigrating Islam's prophet Muhammad as an obscenity, and he insisted that although Egypt is in favor of freedom of expression, yeah, right, that freedom does not allow for attacks on any religion. The Egyptian president called on the General Assembly to confront discrimination based on religion and race. Well, that would be very, very nice if they practiced what they preached. But as we know, Christians are being slaughtered in the Middle East, churches are being burned, Bibles are being burned and desecrated, and yet he says that we should all honor respect for all religions. It's kind of funny how the shoe's on the other foot, huh? Having talked to a good friend of mine regarding Muslim and Islam and the radicals and the mullahs and the clerics, I find it ironic that they go to the UN and demand that their religion be respected, when they give very little respect, in fact no respect, to Christianity whatsoever, even though Jesus Christ is considered in Islam to be a prophet and to be revered. Yet the word of Christianity is burned, desecrated at every possible turn. So I find it difficult to accept that the President of the United States, the current President, Barack Hussein Obama, is in fact a true Christian because of many of the things that he has said in defense of the Muslim faith, in knowing the horrific atrocities that have been conducted against Christians.
But my father came from a Kenyan family that includes generations of Muslims. As a boy, I spent several years in Indonesia and heard the call of the azan at the break of dawn. Well, I have known Islam on three continents before coming to the region where it was first revealed. That experience guides my conviction.
You're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith.
As the Holy Quran tells us, the Holy Quran teaches that, the Holy Quran tells us, and the Holy Quran also says, we will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world.
I would like to speak directly to the people and leaders of the Islamic Republic of Iran, their great and celebrated culture. Over many centuries, your art, your music, literature, and innovation have made the world a better and more beautiful place. We know that you are a great civilization, and your accomplishments have earned the respect of the United States and the world.
I also know civilization's debt to Islam. It was Islam at places like Uluzad that carried the light of learning through so many centuries, paving the way for Europe's Renaissance and Enlightenment. It was innovation in Muslim communities that developed the order of algebra, our magnetic compass and tools of navigation, our mastery of pens and printing, our understanding of how disease spreads and how it can be healed. Islamic culture has given us majestic arches and soaring spires, timeless poetry and cherished music, elegant calligraphy, and places of peaceful contemplation. They have fought in our wars, they have served in our government, they have stood for civil rights, they have started businesses, they have taught at our universities, they've excelled in our sports arenas, they've won Nobel Prizes, built our tallest building, and lit the Olympic torch. And when the first Muslim American was recently elected to Congress, he took the oath to defend our Constitution using the same Holy Quran. In ancient times and in our times, Muslim communities have been at the forefront of innovation and education. Islam is not part of the problem in combating violent extremism. It is an important part of promoting peace.
You know, I understand the president's going to try and do anything he can to divert attention from the fact that his jobs record is weak and he has no plan to make things better. That's the startling thing. I've laid out a 5-point plan that gets this economy going, and he's been president for, well, almost 4 years, and he still hasn't figured out what to
do. Don't tell me words don't matter.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And the way to make government accountable is make it transparent so that the American people can know exactly what decisions are being made, how they're being made, and whether their interests are being well served. Let me say it as simply as I can. Transparency and the rule of law will be the touchstones of this presidency.
In fact, since taking office, this has been the administration that's prosecuted more whistleblowers in 2 years than in the preceding 40 years. It meets with lobbyists across the street from the White House so they don't have to disclose they're meeting with lobbyists. And, this is true, censored nearly 200 pages of internal emails about their efforts to make government more transparent. How weird has this administration's record on transparency gotten?
President Obama received an award for transparency Monday.
That meeting was completely closed to members of the media.
They not only closed the meeting to the media, they didn't even put it in the president's public schedule.
I believe that every single American has the right to affordable, accessible health care.
But these negotiations will be on C-SPAN.
It'll be televised on C-SPAN.
It's on C-SPAN. On C-SPAN.
On C-SPAN.
C-SPAN founder and CEO Brian Lamb tells the Daily Caller that C-SPAN's cameras need more access in Congress. Would you have liked to see C-SPAN in the negotiations to see what was going on behind closed doors?
The president said that we're all going to be on C-SPAN. He never asked us.
This prompted C-SPAN to send a formal letter to Congress today. They are requesting, once again, full camera access to all of the relevant negotiations to how our health care system will be changed in this country.
Brian Lamb, the founder of C-SPAN, is urging Senate Leader Harry Reid and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, along with the president, to allow the public full access.
Okay. Just lastly, why can't you answer the C-SPAN question?
I did.
Well, you didn't, because you said...
I said I hadn't seen the letter, which
well,
I haven't.
Why do you need to see a letter? I mean, this is something the president said during the campaign, and he wants everything open on C-SPAN.
Dan asked me about the letter, and I haven't read the letter. So
well, I'll just ask you about having it on C-SPAN.
I understand. I answered Dan's question, and I answered this
I said I wouldn't sign a bill that didn't meet that criteria.
They used 10 years of revenues and 7 years of spending and said, see, look, over 10 years this pays for itself.
He's cutting Medicare by $500 billion. He cut seniors' home health care by 11%.
It's a plan that asks everyone to take responsibility for meeting this challenge. Everybody.
Exempting some from complying with the new health care law.
They've been granted a special waiver from key provisions of the new law.
All this coming out in just the first 2 years.
This plan will reduce the cost of health care for millions.
Instead, they've gone up by 2,200. Premiums, I think, have gone up 9%.
Still leave 23 million people uninsured.
Let me also address a illegitimate concern that's being put forward by those who are claiming that a public option is somehow a Trojan horse for a single-payer system.
A single-payer health care plan, universal health care plan. That's what I'd like to see.
I think if we get a good public option, it could lead to single-payer, and that's the best way to reach single-payer.
Nobody is talking about some government takeover of health care.
I happen to be a proponent of a single-payer universal health care plan.
And that should never be purchased with tax increases on middle-class families.
Maybe, but it's still a tax increase.
That's not true, George. For us to say that you've got to take a responsibility to get health insurance is absolutely not a tax increase. No, but George, you can't just make up that language and decide that that's called a tax increase.
I don't think I'm making it up. Merriam-Webster's dictionary. Tax, a charge usually of money imposed by authority on persons or property for public purposes.
George, the fact that you looked up Merriam's dictionary, that the definition of tax increase indicates to me that you're stretching a little bit right now.
But you rejected it.
Absolutely reject that notion.
But if Obamacare isn't a tax, why did the president's lawyers tell the Supreme Court it is a tax?
If they don't pay the tax, they violated a federal law.
But as long as they've paid the penalty.
If they've paid the tax, then they're in compliance with the law.
So many people said, you know, back in August 09, we were all saying this seemed to be a tax, and if it was a tax, then this was going to be the largest tax increase in history.
He broke that promise by implementing Obamacare. We're going to see, as you already mentioned, $500 billion in taxes, the biggest tax hike in American history.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000 a year will see any form of tax increase. Not your income tax, not your payroll tax, not your capital gains taxes, not any of your taxes.
All right.
If you make under $250,000, you will not see your taxes increased by a single dime. Not your income tax, not your payroll tax, not your capital gains tax.
You have, however, said you would favor an increase in the capital gains tax.
Well, Charlie, what I've said is that I would look at raising the capital gains tax for purposes of fairness.
I believe that this country succeeds when everyone gets a fair shot, when everyone does their fair share, when everyone plays by the same rules. It means making sure that the biggest corporations pay their fair share in taxes.
That's why I've asked Congress to close some of the biggest tax loopholes exploited by some of our most profitable corporations to avoid paying their fair share, or in some cases, paying taxes at all.
I can't believe we burned through an hour already. Wow. It's been an interesting night. We appreciate your attendance. Make sure you check out the Daily Gazette on the VOCRradio.com website. Saturday night, Night Talk returns, paranormal and alien discussion. That should be interesting. Until then, the only thing I can say to you is shalom.
And now a word from the President of the United States of America, President Barack Hussein Obama.
Sorry, I just noticed that I jumped the gun here. Go ahead and move it up.
Now,
We
now return you to normally scheduled programming. Looking to contact the show? By email, VOCR2012@gmail.com or VOCRradio.com. Come to the blog site and choose your poison of how you'd like to chat with us. So, VOCR2012@gmail.com for more information. You are listening to VOCR Radio on the Terror Chat Radio Network. Hey there, got a minute? We all have busy lives, and sometimes we forget the secret.
small things in life that make many people happy. We work hard, we earn a great deal of money, or we hope to, and we spend a great deal of money. And yet there are those in our world who have no money to spend. There are those in this world that are fighting for survival as we speak. Give a moment to think of those people. Do what you can as a good human being. Do what you can to help their world be a little brighter. Good night, and we'll catch you back here on the next edition of VOCR Radio. This has been a TerraChat Network production. www.terrachatnet.com.